Yes.
William Gingell.
Yes.
Gail Kennedy.
Here.
Deb Roush.
Here.
David Happ. Cheryl Hanley Maxwell.
Okay, we have three today, so we have a quorum, so we will proceed with our agenda if it's approved. And on that note, I'd like to say that the agenda is opening page, therefore approval. I'd like to make a motion to approve it as presented.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, the agenda is approved. For the very first time in my 5 years on the board, we have a public participation form filled out by Mr. Mark Sheldon. Welcome, Mark.
Well, it's good to be here. I guess that's precedent setting, although I think Lynn said that there's been other public participation. There's just nobody filled out that form.
Correct.
So just, hey, I'd like to talk. So anyway, then the county board isn't so easy. They would definitely require that. So my name is Mark Sheldon. I'm the Champaign County Recorder of Deeds, and I just wanted to give you a little bit of a talk about what has happened in our office in coordination with Community Choices, I know, which is one of your the groups that you support. So our office has over 1 million records, and over 500,000 of them are on paper. They're not indexed. They're indexed on paper as well, so you can't go to the computer and find them. It's challenging to get to them. There have been ongoing efforts around the state. There's an actual fund that's built up to allow recorders' offices to move those from paper to digital records. And typically what happens, like in Bloomington, McLean County, they paid somebody $500,000 to take a bunch of their books and turn them into digital records. That's not a possibility in Champaign County. We have substantial funds in our budget or in our account, but it's being used to support the ongoing operations of the office. So we haven't been able to do that. I got a quote for 100 books, or 1,000 books rather, for $450,000. So about $450 a book to do not all the work that we're doing, but a bunch of the work. So I think it was a conversation I had with Linda Tortorelli a couple years ago, and she was talking about Community Choices and the employment side. And I got to thinking, well, you know, could we somehow incorporate this in? And I started to let my mind turn a little bit and came up with, I don't want to go into all the details, but it involves my work as a SQL Server programming guy, using the work that Barb Frasca left me as she had microfilmed everything in the office over the course of her 20 years. And so we worked with a company up in HOV in Rantoul. So we converted all these, the microfilm to digital images, and then we hired two people through Community Choices who now are in our office, and they go through the process, what I would call is kind of grouping. So you've got a book of 700 pages, and one document might be a single page, and another document might be seven, and the next one, they have document numbers. So they're going through and kind of putting together the indexing information. So between my work and their work and outsourcing the microfilm work, microfilm to digital, we have now taken that $450 a volume cost and dropped it to about $60 or $70 a volume. So over the course, and so we have these 1,000 volumes that we're starting on. I have some other things. I've got plenty of things in the queue if we can continue to afford it for longer term. But I believe, so we just now are in our first year, and I believe by the end of next year, hopefully that 1,000 books, that kind of first set, the most important one as well, will be all taken care of, all digitized, and people will be able to search for them by book and page and also by the document number. And we're talking about a $400,000 savings for the county. And, of course, now we've got two people doing great work. And, you know, there's Jim and I were just talking, and, you know, workplaces are mini communities, and there are no mini communities that don't have their challenges. I don't care how neurotypical all the people are. In fact, So we know that, but, you know, it's really worked out well. So the guys have fit in. They're doing exceeding all my expectations. I've got two gentlemen. And so we're blessed to have them. I know from my standpoint, you know, I'm looking out and I have this work that's set out for a year and a half, maybe 2 years. And then after that, we will certainly be looking for other opportunities to use them in the office. So I want to just kind of do that to encourage you that what you're doing with Community Choices and the LEAP, you know, what they're doing is great. And I think the LEAP thing, one of the, you know, as an employer, it's not often that you can just go to somebody and say, hey, look what, we've got some great people that could come work for you. And people take their operation, they say, oh, yeah, I'm going to now find extra money and make this happen. And that's sometimes a challenge. It can happen, obviously, but sometimes that can be a challenge. But if you stay front of mind with people and continue to do the outreach and the LEAP training, where we're always on people's minds so that when a vacancy happens or something, it's kind of time to readjust things, then that sometimes is the place where we can find them to, you know, to plug something in. So, you know, I really want to encourage, you know, continued funding for all those things, that community outreach on LEAP. I'm sure you got plenty of successes you hear about, but I just kind of wanted to publicly tell you this is a big one for our office, for county taxpayers, for me, because they're doing, in fact, one of the gentlemen, so I work pretty hard, and so a big part of this is my job, and there was one other aspect of this that was also part of my job, and about a month or two ago, I gave part of my job to Chris, and he's nailed that as well, so he's actually taken on this project. The balance shifted a little bit more to them, which is great because I do have other things to do. So they continue to just, you know, like I said, exceed all my expectations. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing. That's so great to hear. And I'm assuming that you have opportunities out in the community to kind of spread the word too, right? So.
Yeah. I definitely routinely tell people I've thought about, you know, just even putting together a little video or whatever, but just because, you know, I'm a real strong believer, I would be a strong believer in it all prior to my success personally within the office, but even more so now. And, but yeah, I think, once again, sometimes it's, you know, moving outside of your normal comfort zone is always, I mean, it's a challenge for all of us. So so I think trying to let people know that that you can meet it and overcome that challenge. And actually, I mean, I absolutely feel like this could not have been a better outcome for us. There's nobody else I could have hired and turned this into a better outcome. No way. So.
I have a success for us. CU Able, we partnered last year with Good 360, and recently it's allowed us, we were given four Lazy Boys through the program. Three of them went to DSC group homes, and one went to another family in the community. We have about 13 people on the list. DSC has indicated that they want five more. These are returns from Lazy Boy that are completely fine. It's just someone decided that they wanted to go with a different model, so we've been awful to offer them to the community. It also allows us to offer reduced costs for diapers for our members, and it's just been a great partnership.
Great, thank you. Okay, I just wanted to make a mention that we have two new board members. They're officially starting in July, So I just would like to announce a welcome back to Sue Suter, who's returning to the DDB after being gone for a bit. And I'm also very pleased to welcome former MHB member Dr. Ann Robin, in case you weren't aware. So they'll be back in July, although we're kind of not sure yet if we're going to actually have a July meeting, if we're going to have a quorum for it. So you will see them before too long on the board. Okay. Executive Director's Report, Lynn.
Well, it would be shocking if I could add anything to that report. What, 8 pages or something? The background for that. Thank you, Mark. The background for that was that the president of the Mental Health Board noticed that there are some workshops that Kim has been putting together, and sometimes Chris and Chandra are involved with those too. A whole lot of Chandra's work is directly in support of agencies. She just asked me to try to describe some of the work of the office that's, you know, not the contracts that you spend a lot of time deciding which agencies to contract and for which services. But outside of that, there are some other things happening. And so this report was not so much an effort to collect all of my activities, but to describe all of the office activities. And some of the things that we do through independent contractors are in there too. And I tried to organize it with regard to each board's strategic plan goals. So I don't know if that really worked. It was my first attempt to organize our efforts that way. I learned some things. Maybe next time I'll be able to make it more brief. There's, other than what's in the report, there is something, I think that I've sent an email out to some people. There's something important that happened at the federal level, and maybe there's a need for some ongoing legislative advocacy, but there's a House resolution now, 1329, and it is called the Medicaid Reentry Act, and it would help so Medicaid benefits are disrupted when a person is incarcerated, and sometimes that's it's not just difficult to get Medicaid started again, but for some people, there's a cost in just having the disruption of the services or the coverage, and that cost, if there's any services to compensate, the costs of those services are borne by counties and not Medicaid. So there's two sides to this. Because counties could save $70 billion a year, there's some momentum for this bill. What's maybe more powerful to us is that for young people, especially young people with developmental disabilities, and if they have a co-occurring disorder, if they don't have services to start with, and most of the services that you can get are through Medicaid, then that disruption is huge and also likely. So Dr. Fowler, who is on the Mental Health Board, went to Washington, D.C. in May and testified to Congress and helped to bring attention to this. And so now this House resolution is in committee and people are interested in it and supportive of it. So I think that's huge. It could help so many people. So, but the fact that it's in committee means, you know, we're far from done. Anyway, I don't think that's in my report. But otherwise, I am thinking about this July meeting. We should have a July meeting, but we will announce as soon as we know for all when we're going to be doing it. So we'll work on an alternative date. Is there anything scheduled that can't be changed for that date? It's mostly things that we're presenting to the board so we can be flexible. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay, item 7. The CCDDB board meeting minutes from the May 22nd meeting are included beginning on page 9 through page 20. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Okay, the motion, I believe, was to approve those minutes. Is there a discussion? All in favor of approving the CCDDB minutes from the May 22nd meeting as presented? Say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, they are approved. Financial information on page 21. We have our expenditure approval list from June 10th. I'd like to make a motion to approve that claims report as presented.
Second.
Discussion? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The claims report is, as from June 10th, is approved as presented. New business. We have a lengthy project information and slides from last year's report by the research team at the U of I that's working with the MHB to build evaluation capacity. And there has been some discussion about this on the DD board about potentially working on this project along with the MHB. So did you want to discuss any more about this, Lynn, or?
Well, we have received a first draft of a proposal from these evaluators, and it presumes that the DDB is interested, and it would provide the same services to this board as they do to the mental health board. But the bulk of the services are making available some technical assistance to the agency, to any agency that's interested, a funded agency that's interested, and then also working very closely with a couple of programs in the course of a year actually we have one person in this room who has been through that project through as a pilot program and has testified to the mental health board about her. I don't know is it okay to ask for
sure.
Comments from the audience? Because Becca, would you mind talking about the project? This, what you have in the packet is a copy of last year's year-end report. They do give us a written report every year, but they're also available to come and talk about the work. So we just requested a proposal that would include you. If the DD board chooses not to be part of this project, then they would probably just continue the same.
Is it time sensitive for making a decision? This would be something that I would see
in July.
Would be, well, maybe after we have our full board seated and
the contract would start July 1st. You wouldn't approve it till July 17 or July 20. And so the intensity of their services are not during that period anyway. So this is okay with them to have a July 1 to June 30th contract, even though it's not approved until somewhere in that term. So this, I agree. Like, it would be nice to have the full board seated to have a discussion of that.
And, you know, since we're spending money potentially mm-hmm. on this project, we actually really need a quorum to do that.
Right.
So
yes, you do.
So
right.
I don't know if we'll get that in July. But
right.
So what's the downside then potentially of waiting till, well, we usually
they
don't
wouldn't
have
be
an
able
August
to,
meeting.
They
wouldn't be able
they wouldn't
to start.
They wouldn't be able to start the work because they would have to develop a different proposal if it's only for the mental health board.
Okay.
So
slow down. They don't do a lot of the work over the summer anyway, so as far as missing out on any.
They can.
They can.
Okay. But I don't want to ask them to wait more than a month.
Okay.
But, they could have gotten us a proposal a little earlier, too, so it's okay. It's just that, you know, to get a full year's worth of work out of this, it would be good to engage with it, you know, with it sometime in July.
Okay.
I could ask them to prepare two different proposals, but it does.
A lot of work.
It's not that it's a lot of work, but it's just, it takes them a while to develop the proposal and the budget, and so, because it's the University of Illinois and it has to go through
right.
all sorts of other offices. So, anyway, that's a really good question. So we should talk again about when to bring it, if to bring it. Like, if you're interested, and if Becca wants to give some brief comments about what it was like, then you can let me know. If it doesn't seem like this board is interested in that, and I could certainly check with the other two board members, Dr. Robin has experience with it because the mental health board has funded it for 4 years, and so she could probably tell us what she thinks of it pretty fast.
What would be our potential cost to this board?
$33,000 for $33,421.
And do we have potential resources for that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I think that's right.
Sure. So
Yeah. Oh, no problem. so we were able to our self-determination program was one of the funded or one of the targeted agencies working with the evaluation team. I think it was in 2017, although it might have been 2018. And really, what we were looking for support with was so the one of the main sort of overarching goals of that program is to help people be more connected. And both this board and the mental health board have shown a lot of interest in really outcome-driven feedback from their funded projects. And for us, you know, when we sort of sat down to say, how do you measure connectedness? We found that it was really challenging to do, and that it was really challenging to do for folks with developmental disabilities, where if you just ask the question, you may not get a super clear answer. You might not get a super clear answer from me if you ask me that question, because it is sort of an abstract idea. So we were really looking at developing some additional tools that would help us sort of get at least sort of like take the temperature of that for the whole program. So we worked with them for the whole year, and they so it was about every week or two I would meet with one of the doc students that were part of that project. To just kind of talk about how our programs worked and look at some of the different evaluation techniques that could be used to kind of measure some of the things that we felt were really important and that, you know, that made sure that those techniques really were fit in with the model of services that we were providing. And I think that they did a really excellent job. I think the support that we got, we developed a logic model that sort of helped to lay out all of the many different things that we do within that that department and that program. That was extremely helpful. That's something that I have continued to kind of look back at as I've written additional grants for you all. And as I've just looked at sort of how that department functions, what things are working well and what things maybe need to be tweaked here and there. It really sort of helped us sort of link back into sort of some of the core philosophies that we've worked with and to develop some actual sort of accessible tools that we can use to help to evaluate whether or not we're being successful. On sort of the overall sort of being able to be involved in that project. So one of the things that I have been doing for the last year is being the chair of the Mental Health and Developmental Disabilities Board's Agency Council. And so this is one of the agenda items that's on our agenda every month is kind of just kind of checking in. Sometimes the team from the U of I is there. A lot of months they are. Not every month. But every time they're there, all of the different agencies that have been targeted and the agencies that have used the evaluation bank have really just sung the praises of the support that they've been able to provide. And so they have created like an online sort of folder full of different evaluation tools that are organized. And then they also have services where you can say, you know, I'm starting this new project or I'm re-looking at how I'm evaluating one element of my program. And they can give you some sort of some sort of expertise on some best ways to do that and some best practices. I mean, I think for folks with disabilities, I mean, in my experience, and this is just my experience generally, a lot of the evaluation tools that we use are not great. And that's my experience currently. That's my experience 10 years ago. And so I think in the whole field, developing better ways of asking questions and figuring out if people are having the lives that they want to live, and if we're providing the services that are actually helping them do that, is something that benefits not just us as organizations, but really helps the entire field. So I really can't say enough positive things. I would certainly take part in it. I'm probably not trying to like sway you one way or the other, but I found it to be very helpful.
If this were funded by the DD board, would you be interested in having a pilot again?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Yeah.
Question. assuming that we have one agency that wants to participate, since this would be a voluntary initiative, is $33,000 cost effective for that purpose?
That is a very good question. And
it's more than just one agency, though.
Just making an assumption here.
Well, there are three parts. The consultation bank is available to all, And we heard someone yesterday talking about having used that pretty successfully. It's a mental health agency recently. And then, and I think a lot of agencies have used it, I'm not sure. There are workshops on the theory of change logic model. Those are held usually in here, but maybe they've held them in other places to increase attendance, and those are open to all of the funded agencies. And then the pilots, it would be probably two programs would be piloted. And the way that we've handled it on the mental health board side is that we've asked agencies to tell us which programs they'd be interested in having in the pilot, and then we've had some discussions in the office about, of those who volunteered, which do we feel like we'd like to see some work in that area, and then we've talked with the mental health board about it. There are two mental health board members who've been involved with this very closely all along, and so they would approve the final one. So we might consider something like, if not full board approval for who's in the pilot, one or two of you who wants to be closely involved with the project to give the nod. So are any of the other agencies represented here interested in being in the pilot? So there is some interest. Okay. Your question about cost impact, we'd have to be able to compare it with others, and I don't know of another project like this. The national project I'm working on is, just like all the other outcomes, work really abstract. So,
I just have to say that I saw the DSC contingent there nodding yes, and since the majority of our funds are allocated to DSC, if we get involvement with DSC in this project, I think it would be fantastic. And then I think the $33,000, there's a big difference then in how we consider that cost with that involvement.
Personally, I would like to see the written proposal by the university in terms of what benchmarks they're suggesting for that cost.
They'll also provide a budget. That's the thing we're waiting for right now. Because I think they've completed the budget, but it has to wait for authorization to release to us. I don't know, something like that. Okay. But yes, we'll share that.
Can I? One of the things that I think is helpful too is a lot of mental health at the end of the year and on their success over the past year.
That's also part of the contract, that they have helped us rewrite the application instructions and also rewrite the application itself and the report form that's used for annual performance measures. So they do some services directly to us, but it's not as frequent.
Thank you, Becca. Okay, new business, item B, board direction. this particular agenda item makes me refer back to Lynn's report, and on page 8 she highlights a few special projects for future consideration that we've been kind of bouncing around and thinking about for quite a while. About a few new directions or areas where we see that there's a need. So if you'd just like to refer to that, members, we have some information about shared infrastructure, the Parkland College Foundation, the mini grant process potentially, and of course there's always the big issue about workforce retention and how we can help along those lines if possible. So just food for thought as we plan for the future. And, you know, there could be any number of other things we could add to this, too, as well. But we do have some, you know, some things that we have been talking about.
Can I ask a question on that? Is there a possibility of getting input from the various agencies in terms of what they think might be some future projects that should be considered by the board?
Definitely. Do we need a formal process for doing that or some type of...
The Mental Health DD Agencies Council might be they're doing a survey this week of what to do with that particular meeting, but that might also be the right group to ask. There are a couple of agencies in there that are not funded, but it's more than the DD agencies, but could get some interesting ideas that way.
Great.
All of these projects are things that board members have talked to us about, and they're topics that we as staff have worked on, and some of them are in a state of readiness. Like if you wanted to do, there's another community that's done a student loan repayment program for psychiatrists, and they have three psychiatrists who they're doing that with, and it's working pretty well. It's in the third year. So I have all those materials. That's pretty ready to roll, but that might not be the greatest shortage area here. It seems to me that we're having a harder time with behavioral health professionals at every level, direct support staff. These are the workforce shortages that are really hurting us. And we heard at our state association quarterly meeting a couple of weeks ago that large providers know this. They identify Champaign County as a place you can't hire people because there are other industries here that pay more. And so, you know, for all your credentials and your passion, you do better, you know, selling shoes. So this is a problem everywhere, but it's been identified as a problem here. So that might be, those materials have not been developed. A workforce retention initiative here to keep direct support staff or other behavioral health professionals might be something more like a retention bonus. The end of 6 months and at the end of a year. That type of thing is a little bit hard to administer. It has, you know, it would be very hard for us to do that when they're people who are paid by the agency. So we would have to figure out some of that. The Parkland Foundation scholarship is also a very well-developed idea, but we stopped short of bringing that to you all because it didn't seem like they were going to be able to work with people with developmental disabilities, and so we sort of lost steam on that one. We can certainly ask the agencies.
Okay,
we've heard from Mark Sheldon, and we've heard from you, Abel, about successes. Are there any other successes to bring to us today or other agency information?
Good morning, Annette Becker, DSC. I thought Mr. Sheldon's comments this morning were a nice segue. LEAP did a presentation to Next Generation with 120 people in attendance, which is the largest training to date. And the nice thing about that is, you know, that all of those 120 people won't stay with that one company, and everybody who hears the training one place and goes to the next, it's another opportunity for a business to hear about us. And the way that training came about, a young woman who we were supporting in finding a job was hired by Next Generation, and then our employment specialist approached the business about LEAP training and explained what it was, and they wanted not only their supervisors to attend, but they wanted all of their staff to attend. And so there's been really a nice balance between LEAP helping job developers find jobs and then also job developers getting LEAP presentations arranged. So it's been a really nice blend. And also our advocates, our self-advocates called AIM, Advocates in Motion, they were recognized in a CQL capstone article, and Patty Walters, being the technology savvy person that she is, forwarded that article to all of you this morning. But it really highlighted how the self-advocates are involved, especially in the hiring and evaluation of staff. So it was a really nice shout out to our advocates. Thank you.
I just wanted to share two quick things. One thing also about LEAP is we had 2 weeks ago we had our one of our family meetings that where we sort of provide information to families about Employment First and about employment opportunities. So this one really focused on folks that are transitioning out of school. So we had a panel of Jim Mayer was there. so people from the school district as well as families who had sort of just their adult child had just transitioned out of school, and also some folks who are kind of still in that process, so still getting some supports from the school, sort of looking at, you know, what questions should parents be asking, what questions should school be asking, how to best advocate to make sure that some of those employment supports are in place from the start, so that folks can have that sort of nice bridge between services from the school to adult services, which we know can sort of be a big chasm to jump over. We had really good attendance, sort of better than a lot of the family meetings that we've had. So it was a really nice, really nice event. Lots of really excellent information was provided. We have another LEAP family meeting coming up actually this Thursday, and the focus here is for folks who maybe have transitioned. Maybe it's a young person who's 24, been out of school for a couple years, maybe been sitting at home playing video games, watching TV, has become a little bit more disconnected than they maybe were when they were 22 and going to school every day. So talking to them and talking to their families about how to sort of help build sort of a full life that includes employment, and kind of some how the interplay between, you know, just being generally connected in the world, reaching out to your networks, can actually benefit your employment, and how employment can kind of benefit your ability to sort of be, have things to do and have a social life and be connected with other people. So we're looking forward to that. That'll be on Thursday at 6 o'clock at the Champaign Public Library in their Robeson Room C, I think, the one across from the cafe. So we're really excited about that. It should be a good, another good meeting. The other thing that I just wanted to share was that on June 7th and 8th, Community Choices, along with the Urbana Park District, Imbibe Urbana, who does First Fridays in downtown Urbana, and 25 O'Clock Brewing, we hosted an unconference, which was a community building conference that allowed people with disabilities and people just from everywhere to kind of all come and create the content of a conference together, and then do all the sessions the next day. So we had it was the first time we've done it. We had actually pretty good interest from the community. A lot of people came, and there was we had two or three of our members with disabilities that led sessions. One on dancing that she partnered with another group that she's involved with. Another one of the she's part of CLAW, Champaign Ladies Amateur Wrestling, and so one of the other women that's part of that group and her hosted a dance session for people who don't dance. So they kind of did a little lesson, and then they did sort of a dance party and invited people from the community. And the other session led by one of our members was about national parks. He's a big travel buff, and so he talked about all the parks and invited other people to come and share their experiences. But it was really lovely. There was a couple moments where sort of in between sessions, sometimes those in between moments tend to be the ones that are really kind of the most lovely. And there was, we did some of them at the IMC in Urbana, and there was some folks just kind of sitting around in chairs, and it was like some of our members with disabilities and just some random people that had come to the event, you know, some staff, and everybody was just talking to each other, just like perfectly, like even playing field, like, and everybody just sort of walked into that experience being like, oh, okay, this is the expectation, this is the dynamic, and that, I think, to me, that was like the absolute success. That's what we were looking for, and that's what we're looking for in the world. So we were really excited to kind of to be able to put on that event, so I thought I'd share that little moment with you guys.
Does any of our agencies have a transition kit prepared that they can share with parents maybe a year before their youngsters transition out of the public school system?
I think that most of the agencies have been involved with people in the transition age, but we have, you know, officially funded a couple of positions through the Regional Planning Commission to do that. And one of the people who's doing that, do you want to speak to it? One of the people in that role had actually written such a manual several years before, and I know it was for a broader audience than just Champaign County, so she may have tools now that are similar.
Hi, I'm Katie Harmon from Champaign County Regional Planning Commission, and our two part-time transition consultants over the last couple years have been working to put together a resource guide for families. So we have that in place that we've been giving out. We've been editing it as, you know, as we get new information. So I'm more than happy to send out what we've prepared and are using at this point.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
Do we have any, you know, there's been some discussion about rec, leisure, all kinds of potential activities that might be available to people who are with disabilities on the, who are registered, working with RPC, whose names are on the PUNS list, just to kind of give, just to build resources and options for activities, something to do while you're waiting. And we are still working on that. Is that correct? Are we kind of working on that idea?
Yeah, in the May decision memo, we proposed to CU Able to mm-hmm. increase their maximum contract amount. And I met with them 2 weeks ago, and that's something they're willing to do, and they have started that.
Okay, good. So we are.
Yeah, so it's in development. I mean, of course, it'll take time to gather all that information, and they were going to put it in an electronic and also paper context. So probably maybe like a Google Doc that could easily be printed but also could be accessed electronically.
Thank you. Okay. Old business. On page 67, there's a decision memorandum regarding our deferred. Is that we were deferred from last month? Decisions regarding PACES to applications.
Oh, you know what? You didn't defer PACE. Well, you deferred a different decision. You approved PACE.
We approved PACE and then,
yes. Yeah.
Okay. Sorry about that.
And the expert is here.
Okay. Welcome, Jermaine.
Okay. So after the last meeting, I kind of communicated with Kim and Lynn right after the meeting, and then we had the negotiation meeting, and there was just some things about a fee for service there were some things for a fee for service that in the Opportunities for Independence program, we just didn't see how we could go through a fee for service sustaining that program and sustaining a full-time staff under that structure. And then for the consumer control and personal support, it was a first-year program that has meeting all its goals. And so we're talking about different funding structures and ways that would make a fee-for-service work better, but also requesting potentially to have it reinstituted as a contract. So fee-for-service for one program, for the first I talked about, just is not potentially doable under that structure. And for consumer control and personal support is negotiable, but we would have definitely preferred to at least enter the second year of the program as a, fully funded contract. And in the Opportunities for Independence one, I will tell you guys, we just finalized that there will be some kind of staff transitions going on in that program. But we definitely are excited to move forward with both programs and try to work with you guys to figure that out. Question?
I guess before we discuss, I'll just make a motion. The first motion is to approve funding of $23,721.
Those are two motions you already approved.
Well, but we have to... Oh, here's the decision. So this is so confusing to me because we've had... So do we... We really should, before discussion... Read these motions and then discuss.
Well,
correct?
Certainly for
yes.
The first one you
right.
Can. I'm not sure. I confused
okay.
Myself.
No, that's, I'm confused by the whole, As to make, there's.
Can I make a suggestion?
Sure.
I would like us to rescind the funding that we previously approved. The last board meeting and then act on these motions today.
Okay, would you like to read a motion to that effect then, Dr. Bill?
So I move
to rescind
previously approved two proposals or grant requests by PACE.
Okay, I'll second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Let's move on that.
Is to rescind funding that was previously approved in our prior month for both PACE applications. So then to reconsider, I'd like to make a motion to approve the agency's request to receive grant funding rather than the approved fee-for-service structure of $23,721 for persons assuming control of their environment as requested in the attached letter. Is there a second?
I'll second it for discussion purposes.
Right. Now discussion?
Personally, I would like to see that particular program continue on a fee-for-service structure.
I agree. Jermaine, of the 20 individuals who were oriented and registered in our previous year of funding, how many of those personal support workers are currently employed, and what is your expectation for employment for them in the coming months?
So far it's three. So it's three for 20, although one of those people is leaving the area. So we're now trying to find another job for the person who had a job. But we are also still building up connections and going to be working closely with other organizations, of course, who have more consumers with IDD. And then also we have families kind of contacting us sort of regularly who are finding out about the resource. So we fully expect that, and additionally, we are right now in the process of completing the paperwork to become an SDA, to also or provide SDA services to kind of have that half of the equation filled. And we've actually already had a couple of people who are PACE consumers who indicated that as soon as we complete that process, they will be utilizing us for those services. So we also will be directly serving consumers with developmental disabilities through that process. So we believe that we'll have more people from that side of the equation. So in terms of matches, that's part of why we wanted to seek to kind of go to a contract for another year, because being that this was the first year, we don't have an accurate measure on exactly what that number is going to be. And also, same thing in the registry. We, like I said, we've gotten 20, and that's pretty much in 4 months, because we really spent the first half of this fiscal year really finishing up development of a curriculum and development of a registry and kind of doing some initial outreach, and it wasn't really until January when we really opened the program. So the kind of numbers that we talk about have really happened since January. So we're excited that those numbers have kind of ramped up that quickly, and we are truly believing that that kind of growth should continue throughout the year, next year, and accelerate even.
Well, thank you for all that information. I appreciate that, and it sounds like you have some good direction and you're gaining speed. Having said that, though, there is a pool of 16 personal support workers currently not being utilized.
Yeah.
And I personally would like to see where you can go with those individuals. So to me, I have to continue to believe that a fee-for-service model makes the most sense for us right now.
Right, and that's why we, in our discussions, we definitely proposed some kind of modifications and discussed with staff kind of what goes into putting people on a registry and kind of talking about the rate, and then also including some considering some fees for kind of the ancillary work in keeping somebody on the registry. So all of the updating, because it isn't only get somebody on there and they sit there and, you know, they're permanently there. It's also keeping contact with them, making sure they still want to be employed, making sure their background is still clear. So that program, we are comfortable that a fee-for-service could work with the modifications we've discussed with staff. So we are comfortable that that is doable with that structure, although we would prefer the straight-out grant funding. A fee-for-service in that context with those modifications we feel could work for this program.
I move for the question.
So, again, the motion is to approve the agency's request to receive grant funding rather than the previously awarded fee-for-service model last month, for persons assuming control of their environment, consumer control, and personal support. All in favor?
Aye.
You have to do a roll call.
Deb Bruce?
No.
Gail Kennedy?
No.
William Gingold?
Aye.
Okay. The motion to approve the agency's request for grant funding has been denied. Now, because we've rescinded last month's approval of a fee-for-service model, where do we go?
Jermaine is right that he and Kim have worked out a structure. It's got, you have three rates. And the and what's typical of all of our fee-for-service contracts is that they pay out, you know, the first six payments are paid out as if they were grant. And then from January on, the payments are reconciled against actual billings, so against actual claims. So they've figured out a way that I think was satisfactory to both. So you could have a motion that's something like to approve the negotiated fee for service. Do you have an idea for how to?
Yeah, I mean, okay. All right, I'm going to try. Okay. I'd like to make a motion to approve PACE's request for their personal support worker program to receive a negotiated fee-for-service funding in the amount of $23,721. Does that sound right? Is there a second?
Second.
Deb Bruce?
Yes.
Gail Kennedy?
Yes.
William Gingold?
Yes.
Whew, thank you. All right. All right, regarding the opportunities for independence request by PACE, we have rescinded both of last month's grant requests, fee-for-service requests, pardon me. They were originally grant requests. So we have two possible options. We can approve the agency's request to use grant funding rather than the approved fee-for-service, the formerly approved, or we can move to approve the agency's request to use.
There's a difference in the second section. One says to approve the grant as the agency has requested, and then the second is to approve as the staff has suggested.
And that would be the benchmark model.
Yeah.
I would recommend that we act on the second one.
And it requires
first.
A contract negotiation. That will require another contract negotiation for us to figure out what the benchmarks should be. Is that, or have you might have already done so.
The second motion, then we can discuss if we need to after having second. The motion then is to approve the agency's request to use grant funding rather than the approved fee-for-service structure, formally approved, for persons assuming control of their environment, opportunities for independence, as recommended by CCDDB staff above, with contract negotiation of performance benchmarks required. Is there a second?
Deb Bruce?
Yes.
Gail Kennedy?
Yes.
William Gingold?
Yes.
Okay. Motion is approved. Benchmarks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, presentation by Disability Resource Expo people, Barb Bresner and Jim Mayer, beginning on page 75.
Good morning. So we, on March 30th, we held our 12th annual Disability Resource Expo, and we always try to kind of determine how many people are there, and that's always a challenge, but we did use some little wristbands that we're probably not going to do again. We're still figuring that out. Anyway, well over 1,000, probably closer to 1,300 people participated that day. We held it at the Vineyard Church in Urbana, and that just has been a wonderful venue for us. Once again, Vineyard staff bent over backwards just to make this event, you know, great for us. And so we have scheduled and have a contract in place for next year for March 28th, 2020. So we're really excited to be back there next year. excuse me. This year we had more exhibitors than ever. It just keeps growing. We had 107, which is actually twice what we began with back in 2007, a little over twice the size of those exhibitors. You know, you have this in your report, but I'm just kind of highlighting a few things. We had probably a dozen additional exhibitors, potential exhibitors that contacted us wanting to be there. But because of space constraints, you know, we just couldn't do it. That's you know, a good issue to have, I guess. 17 of them were new this year. We always have new folks. I mean, it just amazes me that each year we get new resources that kind of come out of the woodwork, and it's great to know that they're out there. 20 of our exhibitors were for-profit, which, of course, helps us with the expenses for the event. Jim and I just last weekend went to Schaumburg to the big Abilities Expo there. We do that each year just to see what's new out there and to recruit. And I think we had some really good, don't you?
Yeah, potentials. We have a list of about 10 potential new vendors, folks we met there who are, you know, close enough here that they can serve folks in our part of the state, and who, you know, could bring some valuable services to Champaign County. Plus, a number of them would be for-profit vendors, and so they would have that higher fee scale to participate, which kind of helps our funding base as well. So that's always kind of a nice recruiting ground for us, and as Barb said, a chance to kind of keep pace with what's new in the field and what, you know, who some of the new providers are or what new products are out there that might be of interest to our Champaign County citizens. So,
before I forget, too, I want to point out the picture boards over here. If you haven't had a chance, please take a moment to check those out. Some great pictures of our event this year, and it was a great turnout. And so be sure and check it out. We do each year put out a evaluations, and you have copies of those as well. We had 90 of those 107 exhibitors. 90 evaluations back from them, which is a really good thing. We, of course, use that information as well as debriefing that we do at the end of the event to plan for the next expo. It's just very valuable to us that we do that. We did get one comment. I think that was really neat, and it came from the comptroller's office. Said it was the best expo in the state. So that was neat to hear, and he would actually like to invite the comptroller to be there next year. They had a booth, but he wants her to be there next year. So that hope that that happens. We, of course, had our scavenger hunt that we do each year. That's a big draw for the kids. It's also a way to get those participant evaluations back, and we had 185 of those back, so that was really good. as far as our sponsorship this year, brought in nearly $14,000, which was great. That was cash contributions, and then nearly 12 in kind. We get a lot of in kind through our promotion of the expo, through the radio stations, television, printing, just a lot of different ways. And we do a lot of radio and TV, but and we pay for the radio quite a bit, but they at least give us back, you know, matching, and sometimes much more than that. So that really, really helps us to get the word out. And, you know, one of our big concerns is making sure that we get the word out to our rural communities, and that's a really good way to do that as well. We had some great entertainment. You can see up here on the board as well. We had Rosecrans was there with their drumming circle. We had a service dog demo, which that's always a big draw for folks. And we had a local songwriter and singer that was there. And, of course, the Amtrike presentation. They presented 3 Amtrikes this year, and that was pretty awesome. We always make sure that everything is very accessible. And, you know, we had a couple of suggestions from our debriefing for that next year that we'll implement. So we were really thrilled with our kids' activity area this year. We were in a new location within the vineyard. And by moving our kids' area there, which was kind of cramped last year, we had a built-in playground. We had all kinds of neat stuff, lots of space for the kids to run and enjoy. We had a music therapist there, which was really great. We get a lot of support for that area through First Federal Savings Bank as well as Flag House. So they're really, you know, kind of, it enables us to step it up each year, change things around, and add some things. So our volunteers were awesome. Again, thank you to Chandra and Becca who organized that. We got a lot of great comments about the volunteers, so love that. You have anything you want to? Okay. Questions? Anything?
I have some comments and questions. First of all, I'd like to commend you on the excellent expo that you put on. I had the opportunity there. The question I have there is, I'm not sure you can add any more exhibitors to the facilities that you have, with all honesty. And I think there are also some major logistical problems when you have wheelchairs and the kind of clogging of the avenues there. So I don't know whether you can manage that in that facility, with all honesty. But, you can try. I don't know if I'm hitting, sensitive nerves here.
No, that was part of our discussion at our debriefing meeting, was how to, broaden some of those passageways. But you're absolutely right. Our other conclusion is we really need to keep it at the 100 exhibitor limit. And can do a few tweaks there to keep those passageways as open as possible. Plus, that's something in our discussion of the volunteer force that we utilize, is to have even, more attentiveness to, our volunteers helping with some of those access issues at the ramps. There are a couple of ramps there, and we want to do everything we can to keep those moving smoothly and safely and to limit bottlenecks, as you're suggesting. The tricky thing is, in this town, as far as finding a venue that's any bigger than the Vineyard, we're just not sure that's out there right now, really. Maybe there is.
Oh. How about the Assembly Hall at the University of Illinois? Because there have been expos held in that facility, and looking at the rental for Vineyard, I think the last indication that I had, which was a few years ago, is that the university assembly hall, I guess it's not assembly hall anymore, but can be rented for about $5,000. What's involved in that $5,000, I'm not sure. But maybe that could be kind of explored in the future as maybe another site for this kind of growing venue that you have. It would give you more space potentially. Just food for thought. Can I continue with a couple of things? In terms of looking at your budget, I don't see... usually a budget, in my mind, contains both revenue and expenses. Mm-hmm. I see the expense. I'm sorry. Oh, okay. Oh, okay. Will we get a formal present? Okay. I'm missing something.
So this bill is looking at the projected expenses that you sent us, and the rest of the board doesn't have that, and it's not in the board packet. So I could make that public at this point and share it with all. There's nothing wrong with the expense, but you're right. It is just a list of expenses. I wasn't expecting for us to talk about it today, and we don't normally include that when we do the budget process, but we could. And that's fine, but I wasn't going to do that till next. I mean, we were talking about current year expenses, and that's the memo that we prepared has all of the transactions that we processed here, not the projections.
Well, even for current year, I wouldn't mind seeing both revenue line items and expense. And within the revenue line items, I really would like to also see the estimated cost for the web maintenance, the in-kind. In other words, I want to see as many line items as possible that contributes to the benefit of the revenue stream. No, they're not. I don't mean to disagree with you, but in other words, I don't see as an example the web contribution in terms of the in-kind costs.
That's something that Jim Mayer does under his consultant contract.
I don't see
it's not
consultant contracts
right,
either.
Right, and that won't be listed here. That's in the... One of the issues with the arrangement between the two boards is that will be in the Mental Health Board's claims report, but not yours, because you make a single payment to the Mental Health Board for all the expenditures. So we could bring the Mental Health Board claims to you to look at, and Jim and Barb received monthly payments under that contract. So that's reflected in that claims report, but not in yours. So it's not collected here. We were pulling together the details that we had been asked to. So we can bring more, and I mean, it's not hard to do, but we don't have records of the in-kind contributions because they don't go through the auditing system. So that's why our revenue is only the $14,000. It doesn't include the $12,000 of in-kind, and there's no number attached to all the volunteer efforts either. We've never really done that. And that might be what you're looking for, right? You want to see the full picture.
I guess my perception of a budget is that all line items are listed,
right,
both in the revenue category and expense categories. Mm-hmm. Whether it's in-kind, volunteer, or direct financial contributions.
Okay.
That's what I would like to personally know.
So in the budget?
I'm not talking for the board here.
Do you want to see it in the budget or in the completed transactions report?
Well, I don't want to have us reinvent the wheel. Maybe we can look forward to the future
The document that you have could be developed in the way that you're suggesting. But it's a budget. It's not a list of transactions. So it could include all those other details, right? And become a complete budget. I think what you're asking for makes a lot of sense. We just haven't done that before.
Well, that's my personal bias. I don't know what the board's position would be on that.
I've been comfortable with the way it's been done, personally. The MHB has a more complete picture.
But there's a
consultancy that.
Yeah, it's true that there are many, many pieces of this, and they appear all over the transaction reports because things are paid out as they occur, and they're not all paid out at once under like the way we would for an agency contract. A couple of years ago, we explored the idea of the expo being performed as an agency contract, and there was an application through Jim's employer to do that. That would organize the information all in one place as what you're looking for. It's paid for within our own budget, so it shows up. Some of it's in professional services. Some of it's in a new line that we call Expo, just for expenses. Some of it's in there's a line for Expo revenue now. But in that line, because it's not cash, or it's not actual money, we will not be able to capture any of the in-kind. So that's been a really interesting detail that another board member had pointed out that was missing, and just never asked you to put a dollar value on all of the volunteer time or to detail the in-kind contributions. I think it's not impossible to do, but you're right. The mental health board sees more information, but they don't see it all organized in one place.
And we do keep a record of all the in-kind. We haven't done the volunteer stuff before, but as far as all of the donations that we get, I do have that.
And we could probably put an estimate on the volunteer hours as well, as part of that in-kind, contribution or you could almost call it income, really, because it definitely contributes to the event. We really rely on volunteer hours.
How do you put there must be some type of document that you would refer to, some kind of actuary or something where you'd pull the value per person of a volunteer hour?
There's an actual website that actually gives a dollar amount to volunteer hours and so per hour, so that's not a problem.
It seems like that would be very helpful to do then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because between the steering committee is all, professionals and prominent citizens in our community that volunteer their time, that's huge, and then also the folks who, contribute on the actual event week. It's also a huge part of the event, really relies on that volunteer help. So.
Any more questions?
I don't know where we go with this at this point. Just a lot of issues.
Well, what would you like them? Do you like the idea of Barb and Jim compiling the information? You're putting a dollar amount on donated items and volunteer hours.
I would like to have us be able to see a full budget, which includes revenue and expenses. And within the revenue line items, if they can estimate, in-kind costs, that would be great.
I think that it would probably be best to work with Chris on that so that they fall into the categories that we use and we're required to use and that the agencies are required to use. I think it's the language we speak already. So they have the information, and he has the structure. And we can do that, but one thing to keep in mind is these expenses are not, and the revenues, are associated with an event, so some of them start as early as May of the year before. So it's not going to be, this is not going to show you, this is not like a line item in the 2020 budget for one expo. So the line item that I've put into a draft budget for you all does not match the proposed budget because some of those costs will be paid beforehand. So it's a moving target in some ways, but it's absolutely possible to do.
Why don't we just call it a pro forma, which would be a guesstimated budget of revenue and expenses for 1 year?
Associated with one event. Is that okay? Instead of associated with a fiscal year?
Yeah, that's fine.
That's all right, okay.
That's fine with
me. Then I think that's much more manageable for them.
Is that a recommendation we're making to the coordinators for this?
Go ahead and recommend it.
Okay. I don't know exactly how to put it in a motion for the board here. help me. Okay. Do you get the gist of it? Okay. Thank you.
Do you have any more to present to us? You guys do a great job. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, for informational purposes, we have a number of documents in the packet. We have agency PY 2019 third quarter reports. We have PY 2019 third quarter service data. And then moving on, our meeting schedules are on pages 141 to 144. There's been some discussion about changing the time of our meetings, but I believe now the decision has been made that we're going to continue on at 8 o'clock, right? Okay. Acronyms are listed on pages 145 to 152. Anything to report on MHB? Mark's not here?
They met last week for roughly the same business that you're doing today. There was a presentation on the expo and discussion, and I think they'll appreciate this direction. So that's all good. They also had a very long discussion about planning for a program that might meet, like, we have a service gap for sure in the mental health board service system, and it's going to be quite an effort to find just the right thing to put in that gap because it's an important gap. So lots of time on who should be in the committee, what the committee should do, what we're looking for. It was a very interesting discussion. But the next time they meet actually is this evening for a study session in which they'll talk about the process by which they review the applications for funding. They have over twice as many applications to consider as this board does, and they're also really diverse services and populations. So it's a big, big task, and each year they kind of reflect on what could go better. So I think it'll be a really interesting study session. You're always welcome to come to those. Then the next meeting of that board is set for July 17th, and they have a presentation, so it will be hard for them to do it on a different date. Your next meeting is scheduled for July 17th, but we will work on something better so that we can get as many of the DD board members as possible to that meeting. Both boards will be asked to approve the first version of the budgets for 2020. So all of this conversation today is very pertinent to that, and we're actually ready. We have a whole bunch of documents all ready to roll. So I might just send those out for initial feedback before the meeting, and then, you know, we'll have some idea of direction. Anyway, yeah, that's it. Okay. Yeah. Sorry.
All right. Staff reports are included on pages 153 to 163. Anything else to add? Any board announcements?
Could the staff reports have some jokes in them?
Pictures.
Chandra, next month?
Anything.
I put a joke in mine. I'll help you all. I'll come up with jokes for all of you.
Okay, we are adjourned. Thank you.